you're listening to Link Interview. I'm Jessica Itualde. In this episode, we'll touch on religious freedom advocacy and building through relationships of dialogue, active listening, and trust. Joining me is Ms. Nadine Meyenza, president of the International Religious Freedom Secretariat and former chair of the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, also known as USIRF. She is a global advocate for religious freedom, leading and co-leading IRF roundtables in over 30 countries. With extensive on-the-ground experience in regions like Iraq and Syria, she champions pluralism and human rights, earning recognition such as the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community's 2023 Humanitarian Award. Welcome, Ms. Meyenza. So last January, almost exactly a year ago, you participated in a delegation of religious freedom experts to Uzbekistan to assess the country's religious freedom landscape. Reflecting on that time spent in Uzbekistan, can you share how you and your team balanced advocacy with fostering trust and meaningful relationships on the ground? What strategies proved most effective in this particular context?
Yes, well, thank you for having me. It's wonderful being with you. Yeah, our trip to Uzbekistan was so meaningful. And you're right, working in cooperative engagement with countries requires building trust and mutual respect. And that also means speaking the truth in a constructive way to help them to actually make real changes and to improve the conditions. So Uzbekistan was unique for me in that I had served as the chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, where we had regularly reported on their religious freedom conditions and their violations. But we also had acknowledged that there had no country that had made the kind of improvements that Uzbekistan had made in the last decade that had taken them off of the State Department's country of particular concern list, even though USIRF had still recommended they be on the special watch list. So during our trip to Uzbekistan, it was encouraging to visit with government officials, civil society, religious leaders, sometimes the same people I'd met with while I'd been with USIRF, and getting an update of the conditions, and then being able to work with my colleague from Link and put together a report for the government to help them fine-tune their approach to improving religious freedom conditions. So overall, it's so encouraging to see them continue to do the hard work of engaging with advocates, with builders, listening to our concerns, getting our feedback on things like their laws, the way that they apply their laws to with their religious communities, and then taking it back to their own government, having their own conversations and further investigating how to actually implement those recommendations. So it's been a positive experience. It's always, you know, these improvements are always like two or three steps forward, one step back. I mean, they're never a linear because it's a very complicated process and there's a lot of stakeholders involved in the government as well. And so to have that understanding that you're speaking to a government official, but there are a lot of people in the government that need to understand the importance of this before changes can be made. And so it's complex, but it's important work. And really, it's the only way that we're going to see the kind of improvements we want to see in countries when they engage with us like Uzbekistan has, and it's been such a meaningful engagement.
Thank you for that. And for our listeners, the delegation's findings and recommendations are highlighted in a comprehensive report titled "The Assessment of Religious Freedom in Uzbekistan, Progress and Perspectives." The full report is available on our website under Our Work. And of course, we'll include that in a link in our show notes. Another question, just following up on your experience in Uzbekistan, how did those experiences challenge or reinforce your approach to advancing religious freedom while promoting collaboration and mutual understanding? Were there any unexpected insights?
Yeah, you know, I think as advocates calling out for a country for violations, it's so much easier to just post that on social media or send out a press release. Working with a country is harder. Because you're not calling them out in a very vague way. You're actually sitting down with them, pointing out something, but you're also trying to find a solution. So if there's a law that's not great, what you want to say is, this is the international standard. How can we help move this law towards that? This would actually bring more social cohesion to your community. So it's actually harder to actually have an answer for them rather than just a critique. And of course, with cooperative engagement, you don't do this publicly, but privately, which is much harder, I can assure you. Once I was with a government leader And I promised I would raise a very sensitive issue with him. And it was a small gathering with him and just senior advisors. And I can't begin to tell you how uncomfortable it was. It's hard to speak truth to power. And it's so easy to say it from far away, but to actually sit with a leader and say, this is something that concerns us, is hard. And so for those of us doing work on advocacy in a country, it's important to give space to those who are working inside a country. I do both, but usually, you know, I'm an advocate, for instance, on a country like Turkey. I because of my work in Syria, I'm often documenting the violations they have. But I do hope other people are working with Turkey to help them to improve. So we need to give each other space to be able to have people with different roles of doing the work they do best. It doesn't mean whitewashing religious freedom violations. We shouldn't be, no one's suggesting. In fact, that's not a good thing to do, especially if they're hiring you to try to change the narrative about what's happening. But what we need are advocates who are calling out violations publicly, but also those doing the work inside the country. It's that combination of having the bar set for what is the international standard, but also having professionals be able to come alongside governments that are working to improve, to make those changes, to provide programs on the ground that help the communities to embrace each other so that there can be the kind of peace and harmony and stability that we all want for these countries.
Our interview continues right after this brief break.
Want to dive deeper into the world of religious freedom building and helping marginalized communities? Then don't miss our new video program, Link Interview.
Every religion is a persecuted minority somewhere.
In every episode, we bring you stories and insights from the experts making a difference.
We like to think about religious persecution as some problem that's over in Asia or the Middle East. It's not in Europe, it's not in America. But here's the simple truth, we're all human.
Join me, Jessica Iturralde, as I sit down with inspiring voices from around the world working in religious freedom building.
The main lesson for mainstream society would be to think twice before assuming that religious radicals are necessarily a problem for social flourishing and stability.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel or visit linkcommunity.org and click on the media tab.
When we support international religious freedom, we are not just upholding a principle. We are protecting our interests, our security, and our values.
I'm not loving my neighbor unless I love them in a language and logic that they understand.
Catch every episode of Link Interview. Get inspired, get involved, and together, let's foster more cohesive and safe societies.
I appreciate your emphasis on giving space. And listening to you, I just think of the weight of responsibility that you have going into a country and fostering dialogue and just how carefully you have to do that. Thank you for sharing.
You do. It's really sacred work, which is hard sometimes for people to see that are farther away. And so I just encourage, that's why these conversations are so important. And I encourage people that don't understand, have conversations with builders to learn what's happening inside a country, to give them kind of a better understanding of how it all plays out. But this, to me, is the real work for how together with all the different gifts in the movement, we're going to be able to encourage, you know, and help to move freedom so it actually starts turning the tide and improving globally.
Now, speaking of the movement, what first drew you to the field of international religious freedom? And how have your experiences shaped your perspective and approach over the years?
Yeah, so I grew up in a family that cared deeply about religious persecution. So it was always part of my life. I think I thought everyone grew up like I did, reading Brother Andrew's books and going to events about persecution. You know, initially, I was really only aware of the persecution of Christians and the need to stand with them. And so as I got involved in the movement, my heart broke for all the communities suffering because of their religion and belief. I've been so involved in particular with, you know, the Yazidi community, standing with them, caring for them, and advocating for the Uyghurs and the Rohingyas and others. And while spending time in countries that experience persecution, I also learned that advocating for all religious communities to experience religious freedom is actually more effective than advocating for just one, because all the minorities or the different religious communities, and certainly even the majority of community, stands with the minorities, then that is when you're going to see the shift in tide on the ground. And so working to build cohesive societies where everyone gets to experience religious freedom is actually the really only effective way to do that. Even if you only cared about your community, which most people don't, they care about all people. But say you only cared about one community, that would still be the only way to change conditions on the ground, is to build these cohesive societies where everybody has a seat at the table. Everyone's included in society. And so really going from that limited understanding to kind of seeing the bigger picture, and now helping to grow a movement where people come in from usually from their own community and then start seeing, wait, we could all work together, and that's how we're going to make an impact for the community that's so dear to my heart. And that's really how this community has been built, that is working together to work to improve conditions globally.
That's very helpful for me, because listening to you speak, I think I've been approaching the thought of minorities very individualistically. And I think that's a really good thing to note, is that thinking of them together, all minorities, all those that are marginalized.
Right. And they're stronger together. We have decades of Christians and Yazidis standing with each other. And for instance, and so many of them, it just makes sense. And like I said, a lot of the work we do is to raise up advocates in the majority of religion to stand with the minority. And so the whole idea is to have people standing with each other for religious freedom in the country, rather than just have us from outside trying to push the country towards religious freedom. But the combination of the both is really when you start seeing those effective changes.
When did you realize the importance of combining advocacy with the act of building in international religious freedom work?
While serving on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, our mandate was to assess religious freedom conditions independent and make recommendations to the U.S. government. It was clear religious freedom conditions globally had been declining during that time and since. And when I did see improvements while I was at USERF, I saw building going on inside the country, often with Love Your Neighbor community on the ground doing that instrumental work. And that is why I chose to join IRF Secretariat and IRF Roundtable with Greg Mitchell as an opportunity to not only convene advocates who are instrumental to the religious freedom movement, but also builders as well, who are working to build religious freedom. And it's really that combination of both that we're going to see real improvement.
Our interview continues right after this brief break. And with that, now is the perfect time to ask you, are you following us online? We are on Facebook, X, also remembered as Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Of course, you may find us on YouTube under Love Your Neighbor Community and on any major podcast provider, including Apple and Spotify.
This insider development that you're describing, how has it influenced methodologies across different cultural and political contexts since?
Well, I believe we've been able to see some best practices that we've learned that work on the ground, things like cross-cultural religious literacy, but also taking those and making sure they're really fit, tailored by people in the country to make sure they're meeting their own needs. And so it's all very nuanced and very tailored for each specific community, although there are things we've learned that work globally, and really having that understanding and being able to work with professionals that are able to be a part of sharing that kind of information. I think that's how we're going to be able to make the biggest difference in changing the trajectory for religious freedom conditions.
I appreciate that glimpse into your work. How did your tenure as USERF chair shape your strategies and priorities in advancing religious freedom? Are there lessons from that role that continue to guide your work today?
Yeah, so the most important thing I learned at USERF was the importance of civil society. I had traveled extensively in official government delegations where I visited countries that had some of the worst religious freedom violations in the world. And while they were fascinating meetings, what we learned, though, was it became apparent that the most important meetings were with civil society on the ground in those countries, learning what was happening, learning the kind of work they were trying to do. And often we would meet with them secretly. So the U.S. government and international community, like those in the Article 18 alliance of 43 countries, you know, governments can play such an important role in incentivizing good behavior and punishing bad behavior with economic and other actions. So you have civil society working on the ground to build religious freedom is one side of the coin. And then, of course, governments on the other side, incentivizing that behavior, having policies to support the work. You know, it's so important that both of them are happening at the same time. And, you know, government and civil society working together strategically could really move the needle on religious freedom conditions globally. And as we enter this new year with this new administration and the Earth Summit, all the gatherings that we're having, I'm hopeful that this year we could be more strategic in how the work is done, and we could see turn the tide to those deteriorating religious freedom conditions we're seeing globally.
Thank you, Nadine. I appreciate that. I like to wrap up our interview by asking a question that I like to ask everyone given the chance, and that is there anything in this interview that you were hoping we would cover that we haven't? Or is there anything important you would like to share with our community that we haven't touched on yet?
I just want to make it clear that anyone interested in being a part of the religious freedom movement, there is room for you. We need advocates, builders, academics, researchers, and people willing to amplify the stories of persecution and also the stories of success and the work being done on the ground. So if you have any interest in being a part, you know, I'd encourage you to go to earthsecretariat.org, earthroundtable.org, either one, and signing up. We'll send you out notices when we're having online meetings. You can join, learn more about it. You can follow me on Twitter, Nadine Manns on Twitter. I'm very active there. And start seeing some other folks that you could follow that also advocate for religious freedom, and you could amplify these stories. You know, if you're interested in a specific country, we have working groups on different regions as part of the Religious Freedom Roundtable that we run in Washington, D.C. We can plug you in with experts where you can learn about what's happening there and the best way you could support religious freedom in those regions. So there's really room for everybody. And this movement is so important that everyone has the right to believe what they choose and be able to follow their conscience. And so we're hopeful that this year we're going to see lots of progress, and we also need lots more people involved in the movement.
Great. And for our listeners, we'll include those links that Nadine just mentioned as well in our show notes. Thank you, Nadine, for sharing your insights and experiences with us in this program. Your dedication to advancing religious freedom and fostering meaningful collaboration is inspiring to me and for so many. And we're grateful for the work you continue to do in building a more understanding world.
Well, I so appreciate the work you do and the work of a Love Your Neighbor community, and the fact that we get to be partners together in this work has been really inspirational to me too.
I'm Jessica E. Twalde, and you've been listening to Link Interview. For more information on religious freedom building, including reports, stories, and case studies, visit linkcommunity.org. Additionally, if you found today's program valuable, please like, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and share this program on your social media. Thanks for tuning in.